Suddenly, she knew exactly where she was. She'd never seen it from this angle, but knew without a doubt that she was lying at the bottom of the 60-foot metamorphic cliff that formed a nearly sheer wall on the seaward side of Whitby Island. She had no memory of coming to the island. Had she come alone, or had someone been with her? Aimee often sailed out in the summer to paint, sometimes alone, sometimes not. If Mark, or perhaps Edward, had come this time, surely there was a chance, even a likelihood of rescue. Sooner or later he would miss her and come looking. The island wasn't big, only 33 acres of rock and piney woods rising from the ocean 3 miles out from the city of Portland. Aimee shivered. Soon the sun would be going behind the cliff and she would get even colder. Clutching her arms around herself for warmth, she wondered if crawling closer to the cliff would be a good idea. The large rocks at the base might provide some shelter from the wind and sea spray. On the other hand, being tucked in like that would make it impossible for anyone at the top to see her and come to her rescue. How strange it would be, she thought, for her life to end here, in this cold, foreign place with its rigid Puritan ways, so far from the bohemian artist's life she'd lived in Paris, so far from the warmth of Provence, so odd she'd come here to live. It was all Edward's fault. No, perhaps her own fault. After all, it was she who had fallen so hopelessly in love with this intense American with his dark, dangerous eyes. Aimee's mind went back to the wet September day in 1894 when Edward Whitby first walked into the drawing studio at the Académie Julienne, the art school just south of Montmartre, where her father was an instructor. The moment Edward spotted her, he stopped in his tracks and stared. Even as he was setting up his bench and arranging his supplies, his eyes kept darting, not to the nude female model standing on the platform in front of him, but over to Aimee, who sat, trying hard to concentrate on her own sketches, and not quite succeeding. After class, he walked over, carrying his sketch pad. "Pardon, mademoiselle," he said. "Do you speak English?"
"Yes," she smiled. "Quite well. My mother is English."
"That is good," he said.
"Et pourquoi?"
"Because my French is appalling."
"Ah, may I see?" she asked, pointing at the sheets he carried.
He hesitated, as if debating whether or not to show her the work.
"It's only fair. It was easy to tell you were drawing me and not the model."
He blushed, the first and possibly only time she'd ever seen Edward blush. He handed her the sheets one at a time. She leafed slowly through them.
"They're very good. You've captured me quite well, even though I was moving. You should show these to my father."
"Your father?"
"Yes. Auguste Garnier. I am Aimee Garnier."
"Auguste Garnier is one of the most respected portraitists in France."
"So I've heard, but he is also my father, and your instructor. It is only because my name is Garnier that I am allowed to attend the men's classes."
"And why do you want to attend the men's class?"
"Because the instructors are better," she paused, "and the male students so much more interesting."
Edward smiled at what he took to be a compliment. He obviously thought she was talking about him, and perhaps she was. How very forward of her. "May I invite you for a cup of coffee, or perhaps a glass of wine?" he asked.
"Why don't you join us instead?"
"Us?"
"Yes, a group of students meets regularly after class at the Café Lézard just up the street. Mostly Americans. The Académie has more American students than mice in the basement. But that's all right. I like Americans. You all take everything so very seriously."
"Oh, do we now?"
"Oh, yes, you do. Art, politics, l'amour."
She paused.
"What is your name?"
"Edward. Are there other women in this group?"
"No, they're all men, except for me,"
she said the last with a wicked smile. He smiled back, and she knew he was hooked. What she didn't know was that from that moment on, for Edward Whitby to share Aimee's attention with even one other man was for him intolerable, and always would be.
The sun descended behind the cliff. The air grew colder.